Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with gastroenteropathy if you brought me down with the idea that you missed today's show. KPIs, our panel from the Nonprofit Technology Conference, 18NTC, shares its wisdom and insight on using key performance indicators to build consensus around goals and measures for your nonprofit. They're Anna Rhodes and Brenna Holmes from Chapman, Cubine, and Hussey. And fundraging. Is your org positioned to accept help from supporters who are pissed off and want to channel their anger to something constructive, like raising money for you? Amy Sample Ward, our social media contributor and CEO of N10, Nonprofit Technology Network, explains what's going on and how you can take advantage. On Tony's Take Two, thank you. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven, and technology-enabled. Tony.ma/Pursuant. Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, wegnercpas.com. By Telos, turning credit card processing into your passive revenue stream. Tony.ma/TonyTelos. And by Text2Give, mobile donations made easy. Text NPR to 444-999. Here are Anna Rhodes and Brenna Holmes with KPIs.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 18NTC, the Nonprofit Technology Conference in New Orleans. This interview is sponsored by Network for Good, easy-to-use donor management and fundraising software for nonprofits. My guests are Anna Rhodes and Brenna Holmes. Anna is Deputy Director of Analytics at Chapman, Cubine, and Hussey, and Brenna Holmes is Vice President of Digital at CCAH. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you both.
Yeah.
Have you done your session already?
We did. We just finished it.
Just finished. Oh,
yes.
You're coming off it. All right.
Yeah.
Coming off the high.
Exactly.
And the bar is open now.
Life is good.
The cash flow is open. Yes. Perfect timing. Your topic was, but are we making progress establishing and using KPIs? Okay. We may as well start with it just to make sure that everybody understands that a KPI is a... All right, why don't you say it in unison together?
A key performance indicator.
Beautiful. You see that velvety voice? Okay. I think that's pretty well understood. But let's just make sure. Okay. Why are these things so important? Let's start with Anna.
Because it is so hard to keep everyone within a nonprofit working towards the same goal instead of looking at all of their different measurements. So having a way to agree on what success really looks like can actually end up making you be more successful in the end, because then you're all working towards the same goals.
Okay, so there's part of this topic is organizational buy-in.
Yes.
Whatever, however you define
yep. mm-hmm. whatever, focus.
A bunch of people need to agree.
Yes.
So we'll call that buy-in. Okay. I also see another part of this is data overload. I mean, there's just so much available.
Right.
We need to focus on, Brenna, on what's the most important stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And the main thing, you know, clearing up the misnomer that not all metrics are KPIs, right? So everybody does have to agree on what are we trying to track? Why are we tracking it? How does that help us meet our strategic objectives and our end goals, right? So once you have the buy-in on all those goals, then you're able to dig down deeper and develop what are those specific metrics that will help us meet these KPIs that we can then measure against those strategic objectives to ensure that we do have success and that we are tracking over time.
Okay, very good. That's a great overview. Thank you. All mm-hmm. right, so Should we start with our organizational goals?
Yes.
Because that's what we're measuring against, as you were just saying.
Okay. Exactly.
So now we got to get. So this all obviously should flow from our mission, mm-hmm. right? We're going to go back to that 14-year-old voice, that root reason that we exist, our mission statement.
Yes.
Okay. From that we have goals. Okay. I'm going to assume that everybody buys into the mission. Otherwise, they wouldn't be working there.
Hopefully, yeah.
But now when we get to the goal stage, people could start falling out. Mm-hmm. That's where the disagreement, it's not too far from mission to goal.
Right.
But we could start losing people. What do we do? Go ahead, Brenna. Keep
sure.
going.
Yeah.
Get us started.
So we like to focus it on, you know, the building kind of SMART goals, right? So what do we need to do departmentally, department by department, to help us achieve our mission? And really honing it in to really no more than 2-3. Anna went up to 5 in our session. I was like, oh, that's a lot. but, you know, 2-3 things that we all can agree on as a group, that these are priorities, these are important goals. And, yes, there's other things that are important, but if we let ourselves go down the rabbit hole of just saying, listing everything that's important, nothing's no longer important.
Which is what you're starting with. You're referring to earlier with the data overload, yeah. And it's especially easy because digital metrics can be so different than offline metrics. Sure. To instead have the...
I'm actually moving it away a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Okay, don't worry.
It can actually be easy to have the metrics create new divisions within just the development department, divisions that didn't even exist before. But as
now the data is causing problems rather than solving.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So as long as you're looking at 20 things in Google Analytics and through the Facebook manager over here, and then a completely different set of metrics for direct mail, you're not even working towards the same goals within the development department. So that's part of why it's so important to start at the goal side of things rather than at the measurement side of things, so that the measurements always are serving the goals.
Supporting those goals, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I imagine we need top-down, this has got to come from leadership, the goal agreement. We're still in the goal agreement stage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be driven from above and accepted,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be driven from above, but definitely...
As I was saying it, I was thinking it could be bottom-up.
It can.
You know, it could be, but the leadership has to be on
board. In
agreement,
yes.
Okay, for sure. Yeah. All right, yeah. All right, so we agree on our goals now.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're moving to our KPIs. How are we going to, how do we know what that's measurable belongs at the top within these goals that we've all agreed on?
Well, and even before you get to what are the KPIs, we need to develop strategic objectives for each goal.
Okay.
Because the goals tend to be a little bit umbrella.
Right. They're vague and aspirational.
Exactly. Like we used Greenpeace, one of our clients in our session today, partnered with us, and one of their goals is defending democracy.
Okay.
Well, that's big, right? And existential and long and so then we developed strategic objectives that will help them measure against whether or not they're being successful in defending democracy.
It's time for a break. Pursuant, their ebook is Fast Nonprofit Growth, Stealing from the Startups. They take the secrets from the fastest growing startups and apply those methods and practices to your nonprofit. It's free, as you're accustomed to, all the Pursuant resources are, and it's on the listener landing page. No surprise. tony.ma/pursuant. Capital P for please, and Pursuant, I guess. Now, back to KPIs from the Nonprofit Technology Conference.
So what are some of them that they chose?
So we work through them from...
Where's Greenpeace? How come they're not here?
I know, Zach's not here.
How are they not at this table? All right.
I know.
They're lost. Sorry, it's Nonprofit Radio. It's your life.
I know.
But we work through them from the department perspective. So what would it mean for the fundraising department to be supporting the organization goal of defend democracy? So it is easy for fundraisers to think that their job is always the same. It is always just raise money, raise lots of money, and then we're done. But there actually is more nuance in that. If we're trying to defend democracy, well, sadly, that isn't something that we're just doing today or for the next month. That's actually a long-term project, certainly at least through the Trump presidency.
You can say it.
Given how Greenpeace defines this goal of actually reducing the amount of money in politics. I mean, that's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. So that means whatever funding that fundraising is supplying has to be sustainable. And it's the net that matters, yeah, not just the gross tomorrow. Okay, so that means now we've clarified the objective in the fundraising department. So that's the next stage. We've come up with the mission statement for the organization. We've turned that into a number of goals for the organization, the big dream things, defend democracy, yep, stop global warming, all of these huge concepts. And then we've broken them down for how does my department contribute to that? And only once you've done that can you decide, what am I going to measure? What's actually meaningful?
What do
here?
I need
okay.
to measure?
Okay.
Right? So the strategic objective is growth in sustainable net revenue. Well, both sustainable and net are two measurable things. So then you can build your KPIs off of those keywords and actually decide on what are the metrics that we have to check? How do we agree on collecting that data so that everything has a flat measured baseline that we can then benchmark ourselves against periodically so that we're checking in on that growth side of the goal.
And when we're at this stage, is this just our department that's currently making these decisions? Okay. So we're not at the higher levels anymore. It's not necessary.
Correct.
We're at the department level.
But we're going to build back up. So we've gone down to the department level to figure out. So, I mean, you're using your expertise. So you want your fundraisers figuring out how fundraising can best support the fundraising goal, right? You don't, I don't want a CFO deciding that.
Right.
But in the end, the CFO has to buy in on it. All of leadership does have to buy in. So once the various organizations have figured out their objectives and their KPIs, then you have to come back up a level and talk across departments and see how these objectives support each other, mm-hmm, and possibly adjust them is where we ended up with our Greenpeace example, is actually making slight objectives when the marketing department and the fundraising department saw the amount of overlap between their objectives and the tactics, mm-hmm, in specific that they were planning in order to get there.
And so that sounds like an aha moment. Yes. That we have a lot more in common than we realized across marketing and fundraising. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask you, where should we go next with this? Where should we go next with the discussion? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I think, you know, we used marketing and fundraising as the example here because obviously the NTC audience is a lot of marketers and fundraisers.
Yeah.
But the same structure and the same necessity for KPIs, it's in all departments, right? Whether it's your program people who are actually implementing the services or whether it's your public relations or media relations, outreach people, like all of these departments have to go through this same process. And I think there will be a lot of those aha moments for organizations who are used to working in silos when they start thinking about the goals, right, actually being achievable strategic objectives that can be measured to get back against the mission and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about digital fundraising KPIs?
Sure.
You talked some about that.
We did.
Yeah. Okay, let's flesh that out. You want to start, Anna?
There are a lot of questions about digital fundraising KPIs because people immediately go to the measurements available in Google Analytics, mm-hmm, and which one of these should I use, as if the answer is the same for everyone.
Right.
So this just, as if conversion rate on your petitions should be a certain number for every single organization, and that's what defines success because we can show you how to set that up in Google Analytics. So that came up in our session, and it was a another reminder to folks to go back to the beginning.
Right.
Decide on your goals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like in a lot of ways, it's like the ultimate consultant answer is it depends, right? Because everything is individualized. If you're not taking the time to audit yourselves and personalize and get that organizational buy-in and that organizational priority list, then they don't really matter. Then they aren't KPIs. They're just metrics, whether they are showing growth or loss or what. They're just vanity numbers at that point because they have no tie to the strategic objectives and the mission of the organization. Like, we had one question in the session, which was great, and it was about supporter scoring. And I think that's been a really hot topic in the digital space.
Supporter scoring. Yeah,
yes.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, so it's taking basically qualitative pieces of information, whether that's behavioral traits or demographic things, and scoring it, putting a quantitative weight to that. To then build a model to show you these are my best people, my top 10 decile, or my bottom 10, and then also using it to find lookalike audiences and things like that out in the world. So do you want to add to that?
You're doing this for different constituencies?
Correct.
Like donors, volunteers?
Exactly. Event attendees.
Service beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. Okay, so different constituencies.
Right.
And,
okay.
The problem is exactly the same problem that folks have with models in the direct marketing space, is that for non-technical users, they hear model and they're like, oh, it obviously adjusts to my program. It's must have something to do with artificial intelligence. I hear all these things are great. These people are scored at the top, therefore they're the best for me. And then they're surprised when the results don't match that. But any model has to be based on what your actual goals are. So
right.
If you're using a response rate, a response-based model, and your goal is actually to increase high-dollar donors, that model is not going to serve you. The
right.
People with the top score in that model are not necessarily going to be the high-dollar donors. And so it was the same thing with the supporter scoring. It was a very good
question.
Mm-hmm. But it, again, starts from the data side of things rather than the goal side of things. We have all of this data. We have these scores saying these supporters are our best ones. We should contact them every chance that we get.
Our screening tells us this.
Right,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think a lot of it stemmed for a lot of people, and for him in particular, asking the question that, like, which one should I buy, right? Which model is best? Which scoring, which software should I purchase? That's it's like, you actually have to do the internal looking in to find out what's important to you before you decide what to purchase.
Introspection.
That's okay.
And then demand that of the vendors, because it's true that all of these models can be adjusted when you are able to communicate what is actually valuable to your organization.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going
to
get...
Screening. You mean in screening?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not commonly known.
No.
I think most... Most orgs say they just take the algorithms as they're provided.
Off the shelf.
Right.
And everybody gets the same mix.
Right.
Yeah.
Not true.
That's not leveraging it to its utmost.
Yeah. Oh, that's a very important point. I think people are just taking it, and they figure, well, there's a half a dozen vendors, so they each have different proprietary algorithms, we have to pick one.
Right.
As is. Not so.
And not so.
No, you can negotiate.
Oh, yes.
Oh, look, I got a chorus. awesome. Just like the KPIs.
Yes,
I started you off. Yeah,
that's
two songs together.
Ask for what you need.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how big the screening is. It doesn't matter whether it's Martin Lundy or Blackbaud or
anybody else. It is going to affect the pricing, but asking the question... It does not affect the pricing. So always ask the question of these are the things that are important to us.
Yeah.
What would that mean for the price that you would offer on the model that you built that incorporates these things that are important to us?
Right.
So find that out from a few different vendors.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say a good partner vendor is going to ask those questions of you. I mean, the best ones will, right? They don't. No, well, because they do try and have, everybody tries to have an off-the-shelf product that's going to be successful for the majority of users. But really the ones that are caring about donor-centric communication and really caring about long-term relationships with the nonprofits that they partner with should be asking those questions, because it's about building that custom model based on the weights and measures that are important to each individual organization.
Yeah, I know.
And each individual program or department in the organization.
Okay. In my experience,
that's not the case.
Purely aspirational and not reality.
I'm an optimist. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's optimism and then there's naivete. I'm not saying you're naive. No, but I just haven't experienced it.
I know.
Now, I work in planned giving fundraising, so I'm not, you know, I don't have all the conversations with potential screening vendors, but I just have never heard this, that you can negotiate and tweak the tweaking of the algorithm for you.
Oh, yeah.
I have never heard this.
Well, I've always, I say whether it's your own professional development and like negotiating raises or what, but if you don't ask, you don't get.
Everything's negotiable.
Everything's negotiable. Yeah.
I didn't think Martin Lundy was negotiable. Yeah. Okay.
And speaking of an analyst, there's nothing that I like better than being told exactly what your goals are so that I can build something that is really going to be successful.
Right.
Yeah. That's the best
thing. I don't come to Anna and say, show me these numbers. Right. I come to Anna and say, I'm trying to figure out this about these
this
donors.
Question.
I'm trying to figure out the answer to this question. And then she comes back to me with the metrics that solve for X better than actually just telling me X.
Okay.
Yeah.
We still have a good number of minutes together left. What else? Maybe other questions that got asked or other things that came out of that were in your session that we haven't talked about yet? What else is there?
Well, one question that I got was, what software solves this? I'm paraphrasing.
Okay.
But basically it was, what do I buy that will make this...
The KPI process?
Yeah.
Oh,
Are there tech solutions for that?
No!
No, I mean, we haven't talked about that at all.
No, because they don't exist. But everybody just wants that easy answer. Nobody likes introspection.
And there are tons and tons of software programs that can display your KPIs.
Right.
So if you're looking for a data visualization solution.
Dashboard.
A dashboard product. There's tons and tons of them out there. And what I told this person was that if your issue is that you don't have the staff to learn new software and you don't have the budget to buy something that isn't going to solve all of your problems, then don't buy anything.
Don't buy anything. Yeah.
Put your KPIs in Excel. Mm-hmm. Put them in a Word doc if you have to. And it really is the process and the conversations and having the organization-wide agreement that makes this powerful. Not, you know, I'll create some great visualizations for you, but I can create plenty of great visualizations using meaningless data.
Some of this discussion reminds me of strategic planning discussions too.
Yep.
I mean, you're getting organizational buy-in.
Yep.
We're all agreeing on common goals and the measures toward those goals.
Yeah.
I mean, those goals inform the future direction of the organization. So there's overlap between this and a strategic planning process, yeah?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big part of the draw when Anna came up with this session idea. I thought it would be...
Oh, she roped you in.
I basically solicited her, but then she came up with the idea.
Because NTC doesn't like solo...
No, but I'm the one that speaks at these things all the time, and I was like, Anna, your turn, come on. But it was her idea. The session was great, and I just fell in love with it because it's not just about numbers, right? And that's what people think of.
There's all this important questioning
and
agreement.
It really is about the change, like even change management, strategic planning, all of those
organizational
things.
Organizational introspection.
Exactly. Right, and that, I think, is lost on a lot of people, especially at nonprofits where everybody's wearing a lot of hats. Everybody is doing multiple jobs and just trying to get the next thing done on the list, that this really forces you, if you want to do it right, to take a step back and think about how your day-to-day activities impact the mission, impact the strategic objectives, and go from there. And I think that's really refreshing for people to do just in general, whether you're developing KPIs or not, because it does make you think about why we do what we do. And people who work at nonprofits, as well as those who partner, like us, who partner with them, we do this because we love the work, the outcomes of the missions.
Yeah.
That's
it.
And we all get so tied up in the weeds of the day-to-day that we forget about the mission and how amazing the organizations that we work with are.
And people have a very hard time because they are wearing a million hats and they have way too much on their plate. They just need to get that next email out. So they have a very hard time deciding, okay, today I'm going to stop and actually go through this KPI building process. But I would urge people to try it because
we only have a couple minutes left, and I think we talked a lot about motivation.
Yeah.
How do you logistically take this on? Do we meet once a week? These are big topics. You can't do this in a week.
No.
But do you meet once a week over months or a couple days or over every other day? How do you do this logistically?
I would suggest tacking it on to the front of your annual budgeting process. Mm-hmm. So work back from when your budgets are due to the board, and then when they're due to your department lead and due to leadership, and then give yourself a minimum of a month, but ideally 2 months. So it's like not unusual for it to be a six-month process from the time of the department objective and KPI development to the time that the budget is actually finalized and signed off on by the board.
Okay, excellent. That's helpful.
And that forces you to revisit on at least an annual basis, right? Because you're reevaluating before that next expenditure budget is put into place.
Doing this annually.
Yeah.
Okay. We have just a minute and a half left. I want to make sure this fits just right. So, who wants to leave us with closing thoughts?
Okay. I don't know what else to say.
Okay. I wish I had something easy to. You've seen this work at clients, right? Mm-hmm. You've seen transformation in clients. I mean, the process can work.
Yes, definitely.
You just have to devote. You have to devote attention to it.
I have seen it make those day-to-day tasks easier because then you have fewer interruptions from other departments or from leadership trying to push you in a million different directions.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a really good point.
That's a good place. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bravo. Well done.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Fun. Okay.
Thanks.
They are Anna Rhodes, Deputy Director of Analytics at Chapman, Cubine, and Hussey, and also Brenna Holmes, Vice President of Digital at CCAH. The interview is sponsored by Network for Good, easy-to-use donor management and fundraising software for nonprofits. And thank you so much for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 18NTC.
We need to take a break. Wegner CPAs. Do you need help with accounting or your 990? Are you thinking about a change of accountants in this next cycle for yourselves? Check out WegnerCPAs.com. You start your due diligence there, of course, and then talk to them. The partner, Yeet Uchtum. You know him. He's been on the show. He's a good guy. I trust him. WegnerCPAs.com, the place to start. Now, time for Tony's Take 2. Do I say thank you too often? If I do, please let me know. But I'm saying it now. I am grateful that we have the support we have now, over 13,000 listeners. Whether you are listening live, podcast, or affiliate, thank you. If you're following along on Twitter, if you've you're following, what do they call it on YouTube? Is it just following? Subscribing. If you subscribed on YouTube, Twitter, YouTube, I thank you. Facebook fans. It doesn't mean much anymore. It seems to have very much faded into sort of triviality. I remember the days when we used to say, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Those were the dark days. But I'm grateful. That's it. Thank you. However you're with us, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to welcome back Amy Sample Ward. You know her, for God's sake. She's our social media contributor and the CEO of N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network, where we just heard a segment from the last conference. Her most recent co-authored book is Social Change Anytime, Everywhere, about online multi-channel engagement. She's at amysampleward.org and at Amy R. S. Ward. Welcome back, Amy Sample Ward.
Hi, thank you for having me back.
It's always a pleasure.
I'm always waiting for the day when I just stop getting the invitations.
Yeah, it'll happen that way too. I won't officially tell you. I'll just stop corresponding.
Slowly stop scheduling me, yeah. And no. I will know it's over.
Yeah, it won't even be slow. It'll be abrupt. It'll just happen. And then 6 months later, you'll think back. Well, hopefully it's not that long. A couple months later, you'll think back. Geez, Tony hasn't been in touch with me for a while. That's the way it'll happen. Okay, so we're talking about fundraising. What puts this on your radar?
Well, you know, I don't think it's necessarily new. I think it is as old as the world of fundraising, you know, centuries and centuries old. But it has been something that here at N10, as staff, we've been talking about a lot, especially in the last 2 year political climate.
Yeah.
The way that I would define fundraising is you can think of it a bit like peer-to-peer, where it's individuals, it's not necessarily an organization or staff members, it's people out in the community fundraising, and it's the fundraising that happens or the campaigns that happen in response to things in the news. You know, folks in a specific geographic community hear that something is being proposed or moving forward that's going to threaten the way that they live their life or the way that the organizations they support are able to do their work. And in response to that kind of anger, that rage, they want to feel like they're doing something, and it doesn't feel like there's really anything that's in their power to do in kind of that complex world we live in of policymakers and government officials and all the way down to us as citizens. And so they start a fundraising campaign to benefit those organizations that they support, that they see as the ones who are in a position to try and make a change or support people experiencing whatever situation is happening.
Yeah.
So it's really driven by individuals reacting to the news. Whatever that news may be, not saying that this is something that only happens in one kind of view or political party, but as a country, I think we see these examples of fundraising becoming more and more visible, bigger impact, and more often.
Yeah, so not new, but certainly amped up under,
yeah, exactly.
Since the 2016 election and since Donald Trump is president, certainly mm-hmm. amped up, and really throughout the country. But, you know, I even hesitate to say both sides, because I'm trying to get away from us being a polarized nation, but across all political spectrums,
mm-hmm.
amped up.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, there's this sense that, right, you know, it comes from a sense of sort of incapacity, you know.
I think it really is.
What can I do?
Powerlessness that,
yeah,
I think a lot of communities feel, where the ability to make policy or protect existing policy or change processes doesn't feel like something they are ever a part of, and yet they are impacted by the results of those changes. And that powerlessness, I think, is part of that rage, right? That how could this happen, but also how could this happen and not include me when I am a person that is a part of this? And so to kind of counterbalance that, there's this feeling of, well, if there's enough of us, you know, that I'll donate $5, surely we'll be able to pool those funds, you know, into this organization or into this movement that can help this.
A lot of this, I think, comes from or is related to what you and I talked about in August, over marketing. You know, if there's an over marketing problem in the nonprofit community, if we're constantly at 11 on a scale of 0 to 10, then you know, we're guilty of amping up the rhetoric.
Right.
And the passions and the anger and the outrage.
For sure.
Okay.
And, you know, we don't have to go down that path, but I think fundraising, when done successfully, and by successfully to me, a part of that means in conjunction with an existing organization and, you know, kind of a request or pass that makes sense for them to move forward with. When that happens, it's because organizations are not over-marketing, right? They are very clear. They are very consistent. They are providing information that helps synthesize the news, the changes, the policies, whatever it is, and demonstrates really clearly that they are part of the fight or the solution or the alternative path. And that way, it's clear for supporters. Again, you know, these aren't necessarily campaigns driven by the organizations. These are campaigns driven by community members who just are so fed up they want to do something. And so when organizations can be very clear in communication, be very consistent about the things they respond to in the news or the issues that they are going to speak about, it positions community members to know, oh my gosh, I'm so upset, you know, I heard this thing on the news, but I know this organization I support, I trust them, I know exactly what they do, I know exactly how they are a part of a solution that I want to see. I feel comfortable and confident starting to fundraise for them because I know where they stand, I know what they do, and I'm able to even borrow that language, you know, for my Facebook post or for my, you know, fundraising page.
And in a home run by the organization, they've given me the tools and resources to help me create a campaign. You know, so
exactly.
So we'll get to that, just because, you know, you want to have, ideally, you want to have these things in place so that your community is empowered.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you, because you want to benefit from this, you know, if your community is upset, there's a potential benefit for you if you're working in that space.
Exactly.
Do you have a sense of what helps make these campaigns more successful or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like anything, there's going to be those examples that are true outliers and, you know, feel like magical unicorn rainbow fundraisers that happened, and we're not necessarily trying to replicate those.
Right.
But the things that you can do as an organization, beyond what we were just talking about, being really clear and consistent on the issues that you talk about, that you respond to in the news, demonstrating and communicating how you address those things, do all of that. But also, I think if you think about this as a peer-to-peer campaign that you're just not launching, you want to go through some of the same steps. You want to make sure that as an organization, you can take donations electronically, that you know, have that kind of donation button set up on your website, but also that you're, you know, maybe registered on various other peer-to-peer donation platforms so that if people wanted to create a campaign for you, you're in the system and they can, you know, attach to your profile and have the funds go to you. So that's one kind of administrative step to take. And then on a planning communication side of things, you want to make sure that you've done, again, some of those same peer-to-peer best practices. You've got some toolkits that are really easy to find on your website, really easy to follow, that say if you're going to fundraise for N10, you know, whatever your organization's name is, here are the things that we know are successful. Here's what our logo file is so that people aren't just making a version of your logo that's not right. Here's, you know, our mission statement. Here's what we're doing on these kind of top five issues, whatever you think may end up being the things that kind of rage people into fundraising for you, so you already have some established talking points out there. So put some of those toolkits together. And I also think that it's important to keep in that, you know, it doesn't have to be a PDF. It could be a page on your website that is, quote unquote, the toolkit. It could be a Google Doc. It could be whatever. But make sure it's up to date and you're including things that are even for people who want to fundraise but don't want to create a whole page for you somewhere or don't want it to be a long-term thing, but they're kind of really easy to copy-paste messages that point back to your donation form. So even if they don't have the capacity or maybe skills and knowledge to set up a fundraising page for you, they could copy-paste that Facebook comment that says, you know, I support N10, this is what they're doing on this issue, here's the donate link, so that you can even get those folks who are maybe at the lighter end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We got to take a break. Telos, you've heard from charities that referred companies for credit card processing and are getting the revenue each month. You've heard from the companies using Telos for their credit card processing now. Can you use more revenue? That long stream of passive revenue that comes from the fees that Telos earns from the companies you refer. Start with the video at tony.ma/TonyTelos. Now, let's go back to Amy Sample Ward. You ticked off a whole bunch of things there.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to go, but you were concise. You know, you're like, you were writing the outline for your next book, for this chapter of your next book, for the fundraising.
I think that's important to keep in mind as like an idea about all of this is that this may be different from how organizations may think about other fundraising campaigns, is that often really successful fundraising campaigns, community-led fundraising campaigns, the organizations are in the background, but that doesn't mean the organizations were not actively a part of that campaign being successful. So you don't have to be the star because you're going to be the star. All the talking points are about how you are going to do this change and that's why people are fundraising. You don't need to be the voice that's saying all of that. So don't feel like once somebody starts, you're going to kind of publicly jump on that and you're helping them by being really public about it. What you can do to help them is be in the background. Reach out to them, send them an email. If you know who they are, send them a phone call and say, what do you need? Do you need more messages? We have staff that do that. Do you need images? We can give you some images. Help them and give them the fuel to make their campaign strong, and don't feel like you need to step out in front of it.
Yeah. I mean, you want to provide the infrastructure.
Right.
And ongoing support, but I think it would be actually counterproductive if you stepped in and started, messaging within their peer-to-peer campaigns.
Because then it's a perception issue. It makes people feel like, do you even really care about this, or are you just doing it because this organization had you say this?
Yeah, right. And then you have to.
It loses its authenticity.
Yeah, yeah. You lose the first P. The peer is now the nonprofit,
right.
Nonprofit to the person's peers who are not their peers.
Right.
It's too long a string to abbreviate. You can no longer abbreviate P2P. So
exactly, and I think what's important to remember too is that the path you think might be most obvious or even easiest may not be the path for them, and that's okay. If they want to really focus on email, because that's who they are, and they, send lots of emails every day, and that's where they know people will open their email and read it, don't tell them they need to be tweeting. Don't tell them they need to post on Facebook. Whatever channel somebody's most comfortable with, let them go through that channel and say, instead of giving you really easy-to-use tweets, we will write, paragraph chunks for you to use that are compelling, that have links to resources, whatever it is that's going to help them in their outreach. And you just have to be flexible to meet that.
Yeah. Again, it's offering support. I mean, the first P knows where the second P's
right.
Where they hang out. I know
right.
my friends. I know my peers. Put it in the P2P. What's a good word? That was a structure, but lexicon. Sam said in the lexicon.
Yes.
So I know where my peas.
So I
know where my peas hang out. So don't tell me what I got to do. Of course not. Yeah, you're interfering and
ruining
my.
Yeah,
don't
rain. Yeah, but I think the piece that's interesting, okay. and I would love to put you on the spot and hear your thoughts too, Tony. Is the way that these kinds of campaigns, just as we're talking about, really centering the people who are fundraising and not the organization, how that means they are different in the way that you recognize those donors and supporters, the way that you recognize the work of that campaign, and the way that you take credit for those funds. I think there's a lot of nuance in that, given the way that these campaigns often start, the reason that people give to them versus give to you as an organization, right? I think it's important to remember people are giving to that campaign, to that rage, and not necessarily to you as an organization, even though they are giving to you as an organization, right? So how does that, you know, maybe require as an organization, you have different practices for the way you recognize and thank those donors and those supporters than maybe you do when you run other campaigns yourself.
Yeah. Well, I don't take well to being asked questions on my own show.
On your own show? Sorry.
Yeah. It's Tony Martin at Nonprofit Radio. my voice, you just made my voice crack. I'm so upset. No. I would say you'd need to defer to the first P, the person who ran the campaign mm-hmm. for you. I guess first, are they willing to share contact info to let you directly thank the donors to the campaign? And maybe even
right. Well, and that all depends. Where did those donations go? Were the donations happening on a platform where you know the contact information was saved?
Was captured?
Were
yeah,
they not?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of kind of technical
right.
questions in there too.
Okay. But even if I did capture it on my giving form online, mm-hmm. I still would ask the person
totally.
The person's permission, because they know their peers better. You know, they you know how mm-hmm. would you feel? Would you mind if we could we thank them?
Mm-hmm.
We have the info, but we're not going to use it unless you let us say something. Or could we send a message from you to them and maybe the two of us?
Right.
Send a combined thank you message. Maybe our CEO signs
right.
it and you sign it, you know.
I think that's a really great idea for some instances, because you're then maintaining the same relationship you had during the campaign where your job as an organization was to give them what they needed, and now you're reinforcing their leadership in the community by saying, we're going to thank you, and if you would like to, you can pass on our message of thanks to your, to the donors, but you're kind of still putting them in the position as the leader instead of the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. They're in the lead. I mean, they're there. Yes. It's their community that they were
mm-hmm.
fundraising from. So, you want to elevate them. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first.
And I think it's also important. I mean, when we think about this, any kind of fundraising campaign as list building and what that means for future cultivation, whether more donations, bigger donations, or other actions, kind of other ladders of engagement. I think there are a lot of instances in fundraising situations where the people who feel kind of fired up and are supporting that effort are doing it in a way that's not visible to the organization, at least from a like database perspective. You know, they're not signing up on the organization's website. They're not donating to the organization through a donation form that the organization has access to. So they're not coming onto the list, but these are people who are fired up and finding ways, again, through those leaders who are kind of calling their community to action to continue giving them more news, to continue giving them updates, even after the maybe donation phase of it is over, but to not lose contact with those people and continue to go back to them to say, hey, we got $1 million, which is not unheard of in some recent examples of fundraising. We got $1 million in a week. It's been a month. Here are the 18 lawyers that we've hired. We just wanted to let you know, or here's work that's happening because of this, so that they continue to be in a place where they're almost spokespeople for that action now, and they are saying, hey, I just got this word from the organization. This has been the impact of what we did. And, they get to be the ones sharing that news, because you don't have a way to connect with the other people. So at least make sure you don't lose contact with those that you do.
We got to take a last break. Text to Give. You'll get more revenue because they make giving easy for your donors. If your donors can send a text, they can make a donation. We're talking about that right now. It's part of your infrastructure. It's simple, affordable, secure. Plus the CEO, Chad Boyd, very smart guy. He's set up a smart company. It's easy to get the info. Text NPR for Nonprofit Radio to 444-999. NPR to 444-999. We've got several more minutes for fundraising, which I'm very glad of with Amy Sample Ward. What do you think?
Well, so one thing I wanted to bring up is a question that has been brought up here at staff when we were having conversations about this world of fundraising, and that is that you can't anticipate when it's going to happen because
the news of the day
is happening every day.
The tweet of the day.
You don't really know what's going to happen in the world every day in advance. And what does that mean, given that it's September right now, when people are probably have already done or at least starting to do now their end-of-year campaign planning? So what does it mean if you've, you know, done months of planning, all this work, you've launched your end-of-year campaign, it's, you know, November, December, you're running this end-of-year campaign, something happens in the news, it's that moment, you know. It's okay, at least in my opinion, open to what you may think, Tony, but, you know, it's okay to me if that means your end-of-year campaign comes in way under goal and you stop tweeting about it, because it may be more important to focus on this other angle where your community is fired up in a different way than continuing to almost compete with your community's interests. I think that can be hard in the moment to say, oh my gosh, we did all this work, we have all these goals and expectations, our board, you know, wants to do X, Y, and Z, and now we're not going to send this, you know, email out or something. But depending on, of course, you're going to have to gauge what the community's response is and all of that, but it may mean that you do let go of that end of your campaign, and that has to be okay.
Maybe there's a way to combine the two so that, you know, so that...
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it matters what the news is, what the community is trying to campaign around.
Right.
I think you could definitely, especially if you're an organization willing to do it, pivot in real time and make that end of your campaign talking points aligned with the community's talking points. You know, if it's not a huge departure from what you needed to say anyway.
That's I agree. I mean, I would try to message it so that you can take advantage of the outrage and as you're saying, you know, message it into your end of year. You know, that's a tough one, because I mean, I know a lot of listeners have small organizations with like 1, 2, 3 staff people, and you know, end of year is like, you know, we may not make payroll if we don't do a certain amount in the fourth quarter, or and a lot of times, you know, like the month of December. So it's hard, you know. That you gotta.
Yeah,
gotta
I don't think that, you know,
shoes.
On the first tweet from a community member,
I understand.
Ship,
yeah, you're not doing.
You know?
You're not doing it lightly. But I'm just, you know, I'm trying to balance you know, what not competing with your community, what your community's anger is, and what they're talking about versus your own messaging for the biggest campaign of your year. I'm trying to bring
it
together.
Well, I think for a lot of organizations that have a diverse fundraising kind of palette, with maybe online fundraising and end of year fundraising and major gifts, that it just filters into maybe how you balance or prioritize amongst that grid. Like maybe you say, okay, well, our online fundraising focus will be supporting these community members who are trying to lead some campaigns, and, you know, our offline is just going to focus on our major donors, and it might be an opportunity that they feel more compelled because now they see other people, you know, are coming to support the same organization at maybe a lower financial level, but it still means something. So I think it's really about how it plays into the mix.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I'm just considering the balance, and
because
I know how critical certain campaigns, whether it's fourth quarter or not, you know, can be
to
people in to those organizations that are small. Like I said, you know, 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 employees. You know, the worry about making payroll and making rent payments that can keep you up at night. You know, okay, well, we still got a couple minutes left. About 2 minutes or so left before we let you go. What else should we be talking about for 2 minutes?
Well, you know, I would be curious, outside of only fundraising, the ways that organizations are also using the news for, I don't know how to turn raging into the end of other words, but, you know, these are really important moments for organizations for what we were talking about before with list building and, you know, adva-raging. I'm really committed to making raging part of the word. But, you know, finding ways where probably a little bit more on the fly, which is always hard for organizations, whether they're big or small, but finding ways to say, okay, this thing was said, here's how we feel about it, you know, do you stand with us? Something that doesn't have to have any material outcome from it. You're now not, you know, producing an event or launching a program because you've said something, but ways to get your community feeling like they are with you, they know where you stand, you are getting that information back from them to be able to maybe segment your list really dynamically to say, wow, all of these people responded to this news item this day, and, you know, these people didn't. That's another way to plan for cultivation later. So I think even if your community isn't necessarily starting fundraising campaigns for you, or you're not starting fundraising campaigns in response to the news, you can still be using things that happen, whether they're local or regional or at a federal level, to help you get more information about who your supporters are, what they care about, how they came to sign up for you, so that you can, again, better reach out to them, but think about your list before you start sending out fundraising messages later.
Yeah, it's not all about fundraising.
We
got to leave it there. Amy Sample Ward. You'll find her at Amy R.S. Ward, and just follow her, for God's sake. You see all this wisdom? You can get it on Twitter at Amy R.S. Ward and also amysampleward.org. Thank you so much, Amy.
Thanks, Tony.
My pleasure. Next week, Gene Takagi returns with his take on donor-advised funds. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled. Tony.ma/Pursuant, capital P. Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Telos, credit card and payment processing, your passive revenue stream, Tony.ma/TonyTelos, and by Text to Give, mobile donations made easy. Text NPR to 444-999. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hi, are you interested in blockchain technologies and cryptocurrencies? Then tune in here on talkradio.nyc with me, David, every Friday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Time, as we answer your questions and interview great guests live on Internet Radio on Building the Blockchain, where you can catch the blockchain revolution.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.